Welcome to today's edition of Time in the Vineyard with pastor teacher Jeff Torring. Today's broadcast is being brought to you from the pulpit of Liberty Valley Church, Northfield, Ohio.
Luke chapter 1, we'll begin reading in verse 5. There was in the days of Herod, the king of Judea, a certain priest named Zacharias of the course of Abijah, and his wife was of the daughters of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth. And they were both righteous before God, walking in all the commandments and ordinances of the Lord, blameless. And they had no child. Elizabeth was barren, and they both were now well stricken in years. And it came to pass that while he executed the priest's office before God in the order of his course, according to the custom of the priest's office, his lot was to burn incense when he went into the temple of the Lord. And the whole multitude of the people were praying without at the time of incense. And there appeared unto him an angel of the Lord standing on the right side of the altar of incense. And when Zacharias saw him, he was troubled, and fear fell upon him. But the angel said unto him, Fear not, Zacharias, for thy prayer is heard, and thy wife Elizabeth shall bear thee a son, and thou shalt call his name John. And thou shalt have joy and gladness, and many shall rejoice at his birth. For he shall be great in the sight of the Lord, and shall drink neither wine nor strong drink. He shall be filled with the Holy Ghost, even from his mother's womb. And many of the children of Israel shall he turn to the Lord their God, and he shall go before him in the spirit and power of Elias, to turn the hearts of the fathers to the children, and the disobedient to the wisdom of the just, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord. And Zacharias said unto the angel, Whereby shall I know this? For I am an old man, and my wife well stricken in years. And the angel answering said unto him, I am Gabriel, that stand in the presence of God, and am sent to speak unto thee, and to show thee these glad tidings. And, behold, thou shalt be dumb, and not able to speak until the day that these things shall be performed, because thou believest not my words, which shall be fulfilled in their season. And the people waited for Zacharias, and marveled that he had tarried so long in the temple. And when he came out, he could not speak unto them, and they perceived that he had seen a vision in the temple, for he beckoned unto them, and remained speechless. We sang the song this morning, Christmas song, popular one, A Joy to the World. All of us know, joy to the world, the Lord is come. Let earth receive her king. Let heaven and nature sing, and we know the lyrics to that. But it's interesting because the old hymn writers usually wrote a little more prolifically than what you call, I guess, songwriters now. But it's interesting because the third stanza of that song, which we actually didn't sing, says, No more let sins and sorrows grow, nor thorns infest the ground. He comes to make his blessings flow, far as the curse is found. Far as the curse is found, far as the curse is found. Joy to the world, a Christmas song, the curse. We're going to look at the curse this morning because when we jump into our letter that the physician Luke has written for us, he starts out in his first paragraph with an introduction to the gentleman that he's writing to, Most Excellent Theophilus, and then after that he changes into common Koine Greek for the average person and for everybody in the empire to read. But he starts out something showing us the curse, because he says in verse 5 two things. There was in the days of Herod, the king of Judea, a certain priest named Zacharias. So what we're looking at here, he mentions two families, two separate individuals, really, and he's listing for us the curse. We see the Mosaic curse. the curse that is upon the nation of Israel because of their own doing, the Mosaic curse, which was, if you do good, I will bless you. If you don't do good, then I will curse you. And so we find that the curse is laid on the nation of Israel because we have a king who is by the name of Herod. So we're looking at a curse, a wicked king in the days of Herod. And then, of course, you have the natural curse, the Adamic curse, that which was coming from Adam, the curse that was given in the garden, that was spoken about in Joy to the World, the lyrics. Because what we find is a good righteous people, if you look in verse 6, it says that Zacharias and his wife, it says they both were righteous before God. They didn't incur the Mosaic curse. They were walking, it says, in all the commandments and ordinances of the Lord. They were blameless, and yet they had no child. They're under the Adamic curse. They're under the curse that the whole earth is over, the curse that has caused thistles and prickers and things of the earth to groan, it says in Romans, Paul wrote, that there is this curse. And so we encounter this curse. And the lost world doesn't know that it's cursed. It just knows that there's struggles and troubles. I called the guy the other day, I haven't seen him in a while. And I said, I haven't seen you in a while, just checking up on you. And he goes, man, I'm struggling. I go, anything in particular? He goes, yeah, everything. In particular, everything. I'm just struggling with job, with wife, with children, with everything that I'm dealing with. It just seems to be all coming down. And then, of course, as the curse would fit, he actually stays away from church and encounters more problems and more problems. It's just like us, isn't it? Instead of run to the tower for protection, we actually run from the tower. It's the curse. They had nothing to do with it, but they suffered. She had no child. She was barren. And I don't know if you think of it, you know, what caused her to be barren. It could have been that her womanly cycle had some kind of flaw, some irregularity to her cycle. Or it could be that some of her female components were damaged. And so somehow, some way, because of Adam, because of these things, the natural fall, she couldn't have children. So that's the natural part of it. The things that we deal with all the time. The bulk of our life is dealt in the natural realm. You handle a gun, you aim it towards your foot, and the thing goes off, it blows your toe off. It's natural. And then if you pray, God isn't going to put your toe back on. He doesn't normally do those things. It's just natural. What you're going to have to do is go through the natural processes and go to the hospital and have your toe sewed back on. But you're going to have to go through these things. That's how our life is. It's just natural. The bulk of life is found in the natural. But then we have this chain of how it goes. It goes from the natural, then up to what we call the supernatural. And we see that sometimes. It's still natural if you look at even the word. It's super natural. After that, then we have downright miracles. Parting of the Red Sea. Stick forth your arm when you have none, and it grows completely back. As we see these things, the natural, the supernatural, and then the miraculous, is all woven within the Christmas story. The natural is we have these two people who are barren, they have no child. Just natural problems. And then if you look at it, it says that they were priests. Verse 8, it says, it came to pass. I like the way that the Bible, King James, regularly uses that. And it just came to pass that while he executed the priest's office before God in the order of his course, this was his life. He was of a person of the cloth. He was of the priesthood. It just came to pass one day. That's what we call supernatural. We think that it's not. You know, we come to church often, and I don't know if you feel it or not, but I do. Sometimes it just gets this sense that we're just playing church. Do you ever feel that way? You pray for things, and nothing seems to happen. And it just comes to pass, and Sunday comes, and Sunday goes. But it's not. It's a seemingly natural work, but it's not. Because then look what happens in the next verse. It says, he's in his course. Before God, he's just doing his churchly duty, if you will. And according to the custom of the priest's office, this was just a normal custom, it says his lot was to burn incense when he went into the temple of the Lord. Now, this is casting lots. And what they did is the priesthood had courses, and then they would, with their lots actually looked more like dominoes, larger dominoes. And so in order to keep everyone without any contention or arguing who's about to do this, one thing that you could do in your life as a priest was to burn incense, which means that you and you alone on a certain day got the privilege of going alone, now not the high priest into the Holy of Holies, but you as a regular priest got the privilege of going in by yourself to light incense upon the altar. Now this rarely ever happened. And so what they did is they would cast lots to see who would get it. Again, trying to get the Lord to direct his path. Now, if you think about this, it's the same thing as like shooting dice. They're casting lots, basically shooting dice. Could you think of anything that would be the epitome of more of a randomness? We're just throwing the dice, and wherever the dice land, they land. And they did this knowing or hoping that the sovereignty and control of God would reach down, touch those lots, and then pick whoever sovereignly God wanted for that day. Now, when you look at that, though, you would say, this is the epitome of randomness. Naturalness, they're going to land wherever it is that they land. But it just so happens, just by coincidence, just peradventure, by happenstance, on this particular day, right before this gentleman retires from the priesthood, he gets to do the most privileged thing that a priest can do, which many of the priests never did in their entire lifetime. He gets to go in. It just happened to land on Zacharias. Good thing that he came that day, don't you think? Because as he goes in the most exciting day of this gentleman's life, he goes in the temple, he's got his robes on, he is the center of attention going into God. Verse 10, the whole multitude of people are outside praying like they did every year, praying about the time of incense right exactly as he's going in. Everyone's saying their prayers. You know, we don't know what they're praying. It's interesting when I lead in prayer here, because I know some of you aren't praying the same things that I'm praying as our heads are bowed. You got your own thing going on. You're praying about whatever it is that's on your mind. And so you have a multitude of people who are praying for different things, which we don't know, whatever is on their heart, but they're earnestly praying because they know that it's right about now that this is when we know that God is going to come down to meet. So the most earnest thing on their hearts is being prayed for. It may not have anything to do with Christmas. It may not have anything to do with the temple. It may not have anything to do with incense. It may have to do with something that's happening in their life. Probably so. But at this very time, the multitude's out there praying. And at this time, it says in 11, there appeared unto him an angel of the Lord standing on the right side of the altar of incense, which scares him to death, because Luke is very careful to write this information, this notice, that he says that what happened was is the angel was standing and on the right side of the altar of incense. The Jewish tradition was is the right side was designated for God himself. The left side was for angels if they were to come. And so when he sees it specifically on the right side, he doesn't even think it's an angel. He's literally scared to death because he knows no one can see God and live. And so being that he stood on the right side of the altar of incense, Zechariah thinks, I am a dead man. The one first time I get to go in and I'm going to be stricken dead. So he falls in fear. And of course, trouble, fear fell upon him. The angel, though, in 13... says, don't be afraid, Zacharias, for thy prayer is heard. Now, this is interesting. The angel says, don't be afraid, for thy prayer is heard. Now, it's not recorded for us what his prayer is. It looks as though maybe it's for a child. Maybe. He says, fear not, Zacharias, for thy prayer is heard, and thy wife Elizabeth shall bear thee a son, and thou shalt call his name John. Now, I don't think that he was praying for a child. The Bible says that they're well stricken in years. There's actually branches in the authorized version of age groups. You have a hoary-headed, you have an elderly, and then you have well stricken in years. I'm told that the hoary-headed is right around 50, 60. For some of you, it's 30. But for most people in the King James, you know, it's when he gets to well stricken in years, we're looking at about 70, 80 years old. Now, do you know any people who are 70 or 80 years old that are praying, God, what I really would want is a child? No. I'm 46 and I'm saying, please don't let that happen. We're good with just two. You know, we're empty nesting looks great. You know, 70, 80 years old, this dude ain't praying for a child, I don't think. I mean, maybe he was. And if he wasn't, then that means that God is so slow in answering prayers, isn't he? That we know is true. He's as slow as can be. But he didn't forget. I know you've prayed earnestly. Your wife has prayed diligently for a child. So I don't know if it was a current prayer or not, but either way, it's heard. Elizabeth, this elderly woman, is going to have a child. By the way, you're going to call his name John. And so there's verse 14, he says, you're going to have joy and gladness. There's going to be a child in your house. It's going to be fun. You're really going to enjoy it. He'll be great in the sight of the Lord. He's going to be a religious hero. He'll be a Nazarite, just like Samson of old. But you're going to have a hero of a child. He'll be filled with the Holy Ghost right from birth. I mean, what more can you ask for as a mother? We're going to have a child that we don't have to worry about him going south. He's going to have the Holy Ghost the whole time. It'll be just a wonderful time. Of course, then Zechariah then has doubts. Jump down to verse 18. Zechariah said unto the angel, whereby shall I know this? Sounds like Abraham, doesn't it? Abraham, you're going to have as many kids as the sand of the sea, stars of the sky. What does Abraham say? He goes, but how shall I know that? My wife is pushing 80. It's the same thing. He has doubts. Well, how shall I know? For I am an old man, and my wife is well stricken in years. Look at the response of the angel. 19, I am Gabriel that stands in the presence of God. Why would there be any question? I am sent to speak unto you and to show you these glad tidings. Of course, then, verse 20, because of his unbelief, behold, thou shalt be dumb and not able to speak until the day that the things shall be performed, because thou believest not my words, which shall be fulfilled in their season. You won't be able to speak for 9 months, Zacharias. And you can kind of hear maybe some thoughts of his wife. That don't sound bad to me. Can't talk for 9 months. Burn his food. Burn it every night. He can't say a thing. He's like, yeah, that tastes great, love. The people are outside waiting for him. It's taking forever. And then he goes on, he comes out, and we know the story. He beckons with his hands. They think he's seen something and this and that. But the most notable thing in this passage actually is found up in verse 17. Because in 17, he says a little detail about his son. This son. Now, everyone in the world who's a Jewish lady or even a Jewish man is praying for their child to be the coming Messiah. Everyone is. We want our child to be the Messiah. We know a Messiah is coming. And he says, he, this John, he shall go before him in the spirit and power of Elias. What it is he's saying, oh my gosh, your son is going to be the herald of the king. None other than him. This is going to be a prophecy. Your son is going to be the herald to the very son of David. The one that has been spoken about ever since King David. Actually, before that, this Messiah has been spoken of. So all the way back to Moses, the deliverer will come one day and save us and rescue the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. One day will come and rescue us out of all the oppression and save us from the nations. And your son prophesied about this is actually going to be his herald. He will be the one who gets to stand before and announce this king. And so what he's looking at is the prophecy of these things. And so for us to get the grasp of what's happening, what the Jew would have known, we would go back to Malachi where it is prophesied about this one who will go in the spirit and power of Elijah. So look over in Malachi 3 and find out what they would have been looking at. As a priest, if someone tells you something, you know, we have religious conversation with all kind of people, you know, and then you tell them something like, oh, yeah. But if you say something to a brother or a sister, very oftentimes what they respond is, wait a minute, let me go and read that. Let me Google where it's at, and then we'll find and read that. And as a priest, that's exactly what you know. If he wasn't already familiar with what was taking place, you know he did. Let's go back to Malachi and find out details about my son that's coming. And so you look in Malachi chapter 3, there's just a little tidbit about it, and you know he read every word as carefully as possible. Malachi 3, behold, look, he's talking about my son. I will send my messenger. Oh yeah, that's my son. I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me. And the Lord whom ye seek shall suddenly come to his temple. Now, to us, that may not mean a whole lot, but it does to Zacharias. And then he searches through and he underlines that. He puts a sticky note by that. He reads it every day, and then he turns the page and he comes down to the end of Malachi chapter 4. There's another verse that speaks of these things. Verse 5, it says, "Behold, I will send you Elijah, the prophet, before the coming and great and dreadful day of the Lord." Now, just to interject, we know from being students of the Bible that a lot of the prophecies came partially fulfilled in the beginning and then were completely fulfilled in the end. We've gone through that several times with Daniel. That's just how prophecies normally work. You get a prophetical teaching and it's somewhat fulfilled in its early day or its current history. There is some partial fulfillment, and then later on there is a literal fulfillment that would happen in the kingdom. And so what's happening here in Malachi, what he is saying is before the return of Jesus Christ in power and glory, a forerunner, the announcer, the herald of the king, will come in the form of Elijah. Literally, Elijah will come. But here, what we know is he has said that John the Baptist, his Zechariah's son, will come in the spirit and power of Elijah. So when you're looking at this verse, he says, all right, we're going to get details. "Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord." Now look what his ministry is, though. "He shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children." We have a fireball of a preacher, a prophet who can call down fire from heaven, the herald of the very king, and his ministry is at least what he talks about here. We know it was more than that, but at least what's being brought out by the prophet. "He shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children, and the heart of the children, then, to their fathers." Now, you know what we get from that? He's fixing a problem. You wouldn't have to do this if there wasn't a problem. So what he's actually saying is in the end of days, we're going to have a man problem. We actually have a manhood problem. And it's a bad problem. Because whatever this problem is concerning manhood and men, if he didn't send Elijah the prophet, it says, "Lest I come and smite the earth with a curse." Something is so drastically bad with man and men and manhood and raising up, I believe actually, specifically men, again, men raising up boys. It's so messed up that he says, if we don't do this, God says, I'm going to smite the earth with a curse. And that's exactly what he says back in the Christmas story that we're reading in Luke chapter 1. Look in Luke chapter 1. Verse 16, "And many of the children of Israel shall he turn to the Lord their God, and he shall go before him in the spirit and power of Elias to turn the hearts of the fathers to the children." We just got an email last week from Hudson City School District letting us know, sort of, that there will be a diversity class that takes place for every single student that's mandatory in all English classes. Now, we're not fooled by what the government schools put on. So I read through the email and it only gives you a snippet, hoping that you won't actually click the link to actually read what it's about. So you click the link and then I read through all of it. And it sounds as beautiful as can be. It's a diversity class to teach everyone how to get along and how to cope and deal with your self-insecurities and some pride and some other issues. And I mean, it sounds just lovely. Like, who wouldn't want to send their children to this? And then I ask Caitlin when she gets home, how was the diversity class? I heard it was like about, you know, racial tensions maybe and gender things and whatever issues so that the children need to like feel safer and feel more secure and don't have such problems. She goes, no, that wasn't about. It was all about transgender and homosexuality. But they don't tell you that in the email. They're messing with the men. They wanted you to say, I want you to tell us something that you're proud about yourself. But if you're a white, straight male, you're not allowed to be proud of any of that. What we want you to be is messed up and be proud of being messed up. As a man, as a white male man, we want you to discover your effeminity. We don't need any more of that. We got plenty of that already. The men are just, I mean, really? You can't get men to work. You can't get a man wearing high heels and a skirt to dig a hole. Brothers. It don't work out well. Heels get stuck in the mud. Skirt. And let me tell you something else. You know, this whole Christmas thing, now I'm on a roll now. So the Dean Martin song, "It's Cold Outside." Listen, brothers, I can't sing this. Hey, men have been chasing women just like bucks chase doe. That's the way it's supposed to be. If you got a son and he ain't chasing chicks, there's something wrong. There's something wrong. There's a problem with men. The ministry of him, he says, "I'm going to send John the Baptist in the spirit of power and Elias to turn the hearts of the fathers back to the children. We're going to teach them masculinity. We're going to teach them how to be men."
You've been listening to Time in the Vineyard with Pastor Teacher Jeff Turing. Today's broadcast was brought to you from the pulpit of Liberty Valley Church, Northfield, Ohio. For more information, you can call the church at 330-554-7606 or check us out on the web at libertyvalleychurch.org. That's libertyvalleychurch.org.